And we welcome to the studio my usual compatriots for this portion of the program on Wednesdays of the last hour, Jeff Schlemmer and Robert Metz. We call this part of the program Left, Right, and Center. Okay, I'm centered again. And its purpose is to explore from a philosophical point of view some of the major and sometimes not so major issues of our society today, just to give you a sense of where people are coming from. Now, we want to say at the outset that none of the three of us here, I think, are entirely comfortable with the labels of left and right, or even the center part, because people of goodwill, I think, tend to look for solutions to society's problems, and sometimes those lines get really muddied. Sometimes left and right mean nothing in terms of trying to reach a solution. But in general terms, there tends to be philosophical differences, and that's what we explore in this part of the program. You are always welcome to join us at 643-1290 or star 1290 on the Cantel. If you hear something with which you disagree and you want to comment, or agree and you want to comment, or you want to ask a question of either or both of our guests, you're always welcome to join us. 643-1290 and star 1290 on the Cantel. Jeff Schlemmer is here this morning representing, quote, the left, and Robert Metz is on, quote, the right. Gentlemen, this morning I want to take a look at the issue of taxation in our society today. I think a universal concern that taxes are too high. But many people beyond that, I think, are very ambiguous about the role of taxes. Even if they felt that the money was being spent wisely, they're still uncomfortable with the idea of the government saying, give me your dough. And not give me your dough if you feel like it, but give me your dough or go to jail. Robert, let me start with you today. Is there a positive role? Is there a meaningful role for taxation in our society?
Well, I can relate to the ambiguous feeling that people have about taxes, because on the one hand, we all recognize that government requires revenue in order to exist, and we do need a government. On the other hand, we do have government that in certain areas is out of control, and the spending is just not in a position to be able to be controlled. Problems with taxes have been with us since the dawn of civilization. I mean, recorded history goes back around 6,000 years. And the problems we have today are no different than the problems they had 6,000 years ago. Taxes have, when executed wisely and kept low and serving a purpose, have held civilizations together. When taxes get out of control, they've literally destroyed civilizations. My problem with the whole point of a tax, and I think, this is an end of the rainbow issue for me, because I don't think we can really do anything in the end game about taxes until we do something about government spending. So to talk about taxes in isolation, as we probably will hear for most of the show, is a little bit skewing the whole issue, because the spending has to stop. High taxes are just a symptom of our political and economic problems.
Jeff, for many people, the idea of, quote, the left wing brings to mind tax and spend, liberal governments, NDP governments, and so on, with this idea that, well, we want and deserve such and such and so and so. We know the people have it in their pockets. We're just going to reach in and take what we want. Is that an accurate characterization? And I don't mean to oversimplify, but would you agree that people on the left do tend to think that taxation can solve a lot of our problems in terms of redistributing income and so on?
Well, I sort of hate to speak for the left, and tax and spend certainly is a term that has a lot of emotive value, but from my perspective, I guess taxes aren't a bad thing, and this is how you can tell that I'm not running for public office. I would argue taxes are not too high, that right now we get value for our money in taxes, and basically the difference between paying taxes and paying for private services is a question of whether we get more done by working together as a community for the common interest and throwing into a pool for that interest, or whether we get better value by buying services from private enterprise. And I guess we would all agree that business needs to advance in its efficiency, and there are all kinds of things happening all the time to make business more efficient. But I don't think it's inherently true that a big corporation is necessarily more efficient than a government.
Isn't the difference, though, that, and I refer to the Auditor General's report, that was some details of which were released this morning, where he's noted again this year for the umpteenth year in a row, literally billions of dollars of government money either unaccounted for or spend in obviously wasteful ways. Now, it's his job to be a bit of a Cassandra on this, but it's also his job to be accurate in his reporting. You say taxes aren't too high. If we've got all of this money built in there that is being wasted, surely that would suggest that taxes are too high.
But again, if you had the Auditor General go through General Motors or through a large corporation, you would find similar horror stories.
Except that the bottom line wise, if I don't like a General Motors product, if I think it's too highly priced because they're inefficient, I can go to Chrysler, or I can go to Peugeot, or I can go, you know, any one of a number of places to find the company that is more efficient. I can't do that with government.
Well, and that's one of the arguments for private enterprise. I would argue that a conflicting argument is that with private enterprise, we're spending a lot of money for things that aren't providing value to us, like advertising, for instance, like paying sports stars millions and millions of dollars to persuade us to buy Nike, for instance. Those things are not adding any value to our community. At the same time, as I say, I think that a problem is not so much that it's a question of whether business is more efficient than government. I think big tends to be less efficient than little.
Well, Bob, let me come back to what you said earlier about being worried about discussing taxation in isolation relative to government spending. What is your model? What's your paradigm for the difference between government spending and private sector spending that government might access?
Well, first of all, you have to define what the proper function of government is. And to me, the essential nature of a government is are the police, your courts, and your military. That's really what government's there for, is to be an instrument of justice, an instrument of arbitration. Governments should be referees. They should not be players in the game in any way, shape, or form. So if we reduced government to its basic function and had more of a direct pay system on the other kinds of services, we wouldn't be calling those things taxes. I mean, when I pay my London Hydro bill or pay the Union Gas bill, I don't call that a tax, even though it may be regulated, even though it may be monopolized, but I don't call that a tax because I'm getting a service in return, and if I choose not to take the service, I don't pay the tax. Taxes by definition are, you know, just forced exaction. There's no principle of value or fair value received in terms of having a tax.
But if we look at the historical record here, if we go back to a time when government was much less involved in the private lives of individuals and corporations and so on, we'll go back to England about this time in the last century, for example, mm-hmm. or the United States at a similar time, and through the next maybe 20, 30 years, we had a situation where the Industrial Revolution was coming to flower, where capitalism was certainly flowering, where there was plenty of money around, money was rolling in left, right, and center, government had very few controls on it, and a huge chunk of the population was living in the most abject, disgusting, despicable poverty.
But that huge chunk of the population was in abject, disgusting poverty before everyone else rose above it. Poverty exists as a natural condition. It's not something that I always hear this phrase, poverty amidst plenty. Well, you can't have poverty amidst poverty. It's a comparative term. If everyone around you is poor, then how do you define poverty? But, you know, I'm concerned about what Jeff said when he says that, for example, taxes aren't high enough. I know a lot of people that believe that. The average person in this province pays over half of his income to taxes, which I think is obscene. I think the most any individual in his life should ever have to pay in terms of taxes is 5 or 10% to cover the basic costs of government.
So
What's the limit?
There's no magic number as to what's the right way. Basically, in our life, we're going to have a standard of living, and we're going to live with certain things. We'll have cars, probably, in Canada. We'll have houses and so on. The relevant measure as to how we're doing is our standard of living, not whether we're receiving high incomes but paying a lot of tax. For those taxes, we're getting services that if we didn't pay tax on, we'd be buying in the private market. We'd be paying doctors directly for instance. So there's no magic number. The question ultimately is whether we're better to spend our money as a pool together to buy services like health care, for instance, or whether we should buy it separately. And ultimately that comes down to who do you trust, politicians or big business?
Well, I think the issue is who do you trust, someone else or yourself? That's basically how I look at it. Does the consumer trust themselves? So using your argument, as long as the standard of living is at question, you wouldn't really even object to 100% tax, would you?
If I had a great life and I could get a nice new Porsche and everything and I paid all my money in tax, I'd be delighted.
So then taxes have no meaning to you in terms of that money being yours that you earned and that someone else is spending on your behalf.
Well, again, I would have earned
that. You know of any society that has 100% tax rate and where the standard of living is high?
I don't know of any society that has 100% tax rate.
So are you prepared to be bribed by government then? And provided they give you the services you want, you will function in effect as a slave for that government?
Well, I guess it depends how you define slave. And one of the questions, again, is one of individual choice.
Well, if you have no control over the money that you earn, if you have to go out and work and you have no control over that money, and that would be the case in a situation of 100% taxation, then you are a slave to the government.
But it depends how you define that. Like, for instance, with your car analogy, you say that, well, we can choose a Chrysler or a Ford or whatever. I would argue that realistically, you're going to pay a similar price no matter who you buy from. If you're buying this year, you're going to be paying an average of 6% more than you were paying this time last year. There's not really choice. You can choose your color of your car. There's nothing to say that in a government model, you couldn't have different types of cars to fulfill different needs.
But you could choose not to buy the car this year, and you can't do that with your taxes.
Oh, no, but say again, if you had a system where you had 100% taxation, but government was going to give you a car, they would presumably you get a car at an appropriate time. But if you're going to argue that there's mass inefficiencies in governments that have tried to do this in the past, like the USSR, for instance, yes, there are. They've done a very bad job.
This is Talk of the Town. This particular segment is known as Left, Right, and Center. Jeff Schlemmer on the left, Bob Metz on the right, and I'm in the center trying to keep things on the straight and narrow. We'd welcome you to join us if you have a question or a call or a comment. 643-1290 is the number, and we're going to be talking to Jim right after this.
This is Talk of the Town on 1290 CJBK.
It is, too. It's also Left, Right, and Center with Bob Metz and Jeff Schlemmer. You're invited to join us, and Jim does exactly that. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Jeff, you're a lawyer, so this is sort of like a legal question. I go to Jim Chapman and say to Jim, Jim, if you'll paint my house for 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, I promise to pay you an X number of dollars. So we enter into a contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
What legal, moral, and ethical right does a third party have to come in to take a portion of that wage, i.e. income tax? Now, I have no problem going out to the Ministry of Transport and giving $6 for a map that they produce. I have no problem with GST. As a matter of fact, I'd like to see it even higher and cut back on my personal income tax, because then I have some control. But what moral right does the government have to come into a two-party agreement and take part of that money?
Well, they do that all the time. We talked last week about prostitution, for instance, as an example. There are all kinds of contracts that are illegal, for starters. The government certainly intervenes in those. But the right that they theoretically have is that we voted for them when we said, you guys look after the country for a few years.
So we could put this on the ballot and get rid of income tax then?
Oh, sure, of course.
Jim,
income tax didn't exist until World War One.
Yeah.
It was a temporary measure then.
Because, I mean, if we raise the GST to, say, to 25%,
mm-hmm.
and I want to buy a Beamer, I want to buy three Beamers, that's my choice, and I pay for it.
Yeah.
But, you see, at the very source, I mean, they've got total control. They take 50% automatically. And you see what I'm getting at, guys?
It's
easier with the consumption tax.
I agree with you, Jim. To answer your question, what moral right does the government have to do that? I say they don't.
They have no moral right.
And, in fact, I'd challenge Jeff. You know, he's talking about 100% tax rate that he would entertain. Who would work under such a system? If you've got Peter and Paul,
you're going to give me a Porsche. I'd work hard for that.
Well, I don't think you'd have to. Why would you have to? If you knew it was going to be supplied for you by the state, where is the incentive to work? I mean,
exactly.
if we're talking about human nature and we're talking about what makes the engine of humanity work and our productivity, it is self-interest and it is wanting to get ahead and it is wanting to earn our own place in society, not be given it by other people.
But
and
taxation
having to
has nothing to do with whether they have to work or not.
Jeff, let me ask you this question, Jeff, and I'll do this.
Right.
For every cup of coffee you go down to Tim Hortons and sit there all day long and drink, I'll give you $10. How long would you stay there?
Well, I don't know how we got into not working. I work hard, and I like working
there?
Hard.
How long would you stay there?
How long would I stay at Tim Hortons and drink coffee?
I gave you $10 for a cup of coffee. You stay there all day long. See, there's no incentive to leave.
Okay, but what's that got to do with taxes?
And well, the same with taxes. There's no incentive for me to go out there and work and get ahead if the government's going to take it all.
Well, for starters, say, in our country right now, we've got a standard of living, again, that right, you can live in a certain way right now. Right now in London,
that's
we've got a boom in monster homes that are being built. People are living better now than they've ever lived in our community.
Some people are.
It's a question of who they are. That's right. That's true. But we live in a society right now where we live, in most cases, I'd say, better than our parents, and yet pay a lot more tax. It's all relative. It's a question of how much do we take in versus how much do we pay out.
Jeff, you're assuming that our standard of living as it is now with our high rate of taxes couldn't be much higher if we didn't have this high rate of taxes.
Well,
I'm a strong believer that our rate of taxes is keeping our standard of living down, that we should be, you know, we should have much more modern convenience, much more, convenience more leisure in our life, believe it or not, because of a higher standard of living that is being stopped by high taxes.
Jim, thank you for your call. We're going to go back to the phones with Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Jim.
Yes, sir.
I would just like to make the comment that, like, people like Jeff, you know, that they're what they're trying to do is justify the proposition that it's okay to rob Peter to pay Paul. And basically, like, I equate wealth and money with freedom. And, you know, if you have lots of money, you're pretty free to do anything you want. If you don't have money, then you're not very free. And I would say that, you know, if the government's taking over half of our income in taxation dollars, then they're taking half of our freedom. And that, and also the fact that, you know, the taxes that we pay, I agree with Bob there, are just are keeping our standard of living down, not up. And that if like Jeff believes that governments are responsible for people's prosperity, then why don't all third world countries simply pass laws which make everybody wealthy and rich?
Okay, I'm not sure how governments are responsible for prosperity, but what we're talking about here is whether we're better off getting things that we want in our lives cumulatively together, or whether we're better off going and buying them separately. That's the difference between paying for it through tax or through buying it from a company.
But why don't you call a spade? Like, when the government allows private enterprise, but they don't allow to dispose of the wealth that you've created, then it's fascism. That's what it's called, but nobody will call it that in this country. And if you don't believe that the government wants all our money, you should get audited sometimes, like I am almost every other year. I'm telling you, they want it all. They want it all. They only allow people to earn the money so that they can get their hands on it.
Yeah, thanks for the call today, Robert. It's good to hear from you, sir. And up next is Lauren. Good morning, Lauren.
Morning.
Yes, sir.
I think the central focus of this argument is whether taxation is to be used to deliver hard services, such as Bank of Canada or the Post Office or the Defense Department or policing, or whether it's used for income and redistribution, which I feel has been the focus in the last 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what irks people. And there is a disincentive to work. Maybe if there was a flat tax rate or something like that, maybe there would be more of an incentive.
Well, Jeff, what about that issue of income redistribution? Because, again, that's a topic that is generally associated with people on the left side of the political spectrum. Generally, not entirely, but generally the assumption is that people on the left are people who do favor some sort of income redistribution, take from the rich and give to the poor. Is that an accurate characterization?
Well, I guess it depends sort of on what direction we're talking about. Certainly there's been a substantial redistribution in the last 30 years through the tax system, and that is that if you're wealthy, you basically don't pay any tax. And I've got all kinds of colleagues who are tax lawyers who make sure that you don't pay any tax. You pay them a lot of money, but you don't pay tax. My tax prof, though, in law school always said that was a real bad idea, that the tax system should not be used for social purposes. It should be used to gather revenue. And he said that the reason the Tax Act is several inches thick is because government has always used it as a way of trying to accomplish social goals, when what it really should be there for is just a way of gaining revenue. And then it could be extremely simple.
Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that's a great idea.
Can I just make a comment on that?
Quickly, if you would, Lauren.
Yes. The taxation policy is used as a tool for many things, and to spur economic activity in certain areas. I remember in the 70s, there was the movie industry. If you place your money in a totally Canadian production, it was 150% write-off, et cetera, et cetera.
But
getting back, you mentioned your tax lawyers, and I'd just like to throw this out to you, and then I'll hang up. What about the idea of a flat tax? Maybe I agree with you. I think it's terrible that people making large sums of money can somehow find, I don't want to use the word loopholes, because they're there to be exploited.
Let's not forget, though, the people Jeff's talking about are a teeny, weeny, 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 teeny fraction of the taxpayers in this country.
Oh, I agree, but all I'm saying is that perhaps, what about the idea of a flat tax? Maybe you could discuss that issue. I'd like to hear what both of your commentators have.
Thanks for the call, Lauren.
Bye.
Well, let's look at that. Jeffrey, do you see, is there a role for a flat tax in our modern society? Would it work?
Well, and I guess one thing you have to go back to with taxation is that every form of taxation is completely arbitrary. There's no rationale for why you tax income or why you tax gas, but you don't tax bank transactions right now. I'm sure you're aware that there's a strong move right now to try and suggest that stock transactions should be taxed. And so there's no rhyme or reason to what we tax and what we don't. But at the end of the day, I guess any kind of tax system that tries to approximate you're contributing back to the country in proportion to what you've been able to get from the country would be more appropriate. And certainly a massive, complex system makes no sense. Look at the GST industry that's developed now of accountants and people who calculate GST and prepare all the GST records and all that kind of stuff for companies. It's nothing but a dead weight loss for our economy. That's bad.
No, you see, this is where I see the left wing not understanding the wealth creation process at all. The idea of thinking that the rich have taken something from society rather than created what they have. You see, the rich are rich because they have contributed to society. By the way, I'm a big supporter of the flat tax, and I think it's one of the things that to not have a flat tax means treating different people unequally before and under the law, and I can't support that just as a matter of principle.
What about the argument that, you know, if you make $1 million a year and you pay 10% tax, you're paying $100,000. If you make $10,000, you're paying $1,000. You've got $9,000 left. Well, you could buy a lot more with $900,000 than $9,000. So what shouldn't the person making $1 million pay a bigger percentage? That's the argument.
Well, that's an argument, but it doesn't make anything more equal. It's not going to help anything out in society. If you took 100% of the guy's wages at a certain point. In fact, that happened to the Beatles back in the 60s. They became so rich that their tax rate went up to 115%, so that when they put out a few hit songs, they had to pay the government more than what they were earning on the income generated from what they did, so they left the country. And that's how they taught a lesson to Britain. And that's what's going to happen to every person who's productive, who's going to find himself treated unfairly before and under the law. I have no problem with an exemption from taxes for the first X thousand dollars that people basically need to survive in terms of that. But certainly a flat tax rate within our existing system would be much preferable to any sort of progressive or graduated tax.
Within that, who do you see would pay more than they do now? Which part of society, if any?
I think all parts of society would pay more, probably, because there wouldn't be any incentive to cheat as much. There wouldn't be any incentive to hide your income. And there would be a lot more incentive to earn and work and want to make more income, because you know you're still going to keep 90% of it. I have no incentive if I know, like I know people who don't work, because if they do go to work, they're making so much money already that the taxes aren't worth the extra work that they would put into it.
Well,
that's a crime.
It can't be more than 50%. We have the highest marginal tax rate in Canada is 50%, so it can't be more than that. They're getting to keep at least half of what they have.
Well, yeah, but
there's all kinds of hidden taxes out there, don't get me wrong. If they're paying GST.
Why would you want to work for half of what you're earning anyway? I mean, if you're already making a lot of money, and I know people like Bob, this kind of people Bob are talking about, that have the opportunity perhaps to contribute more to society, to economically and otherwise, they look at it and say, at this rate, I'm already at the maximum marginal tax rate. I only get to keep 50 cents of every dollar I earn. Who needs it? I'm not going to bother.
Well,
how does that benefit the economy?
I guess there are two issues. One, just before I leave the question of the flat tax, I think I heard you say everybody would pay more tax under a flat tax system than they do now. I don't see how.
Well, I think the government would get more revenue from a flat tax system.
Because there'd be less ducking?
There'd be less ducking. There'd be less, just flat tax. Even the bureaucracy would be cut down to practically nil. You just report your income times 10% after your basic deductions. You can still have all those exemptions and deductions for certain things, and period. That's it. You don't need tax lawyers. You don't need all the rest.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Andre's been waiting. Good morning, Andre.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I was reading a book, and I don't know if you've read it, Jim, or perhaps Bob has. It's called Free to Try.
And no, I haven't heard of it.
No. Who's it by?
Sort of an educational publication by the Foundation for Economic Education,
mm-hmm.
based in New York.
Right.
And there's sort of an interesting anecdote, I guess you might say, in it. Like, it sort of asked the reader to imagine that they were sort of, I think it was sometime around the turn of the last century, and to sort of try to imagine or look into the future and, like, where there'd be, like, poor roads around that time. But try to imagine the possibilities in the future, like, for example, horseless carriages or airline flight or, you know, let's say, traveling.
Okay, so we've imagined that. Now what?
Traveling to the moon or whatever, and then just try to imagine, like, which would be most likely to happen, like whether you'd be more likely to have, you know, super improved roads or, you know, this other stuff, which is far more on the fantastic level, like, for that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, when you come back today, like, the thing is, we still have poor roads and so on, like, in very poor shape.
Not
like,
compared to where they were 100 years ago. They're not. They're excellent roads.
No, but the point is, the physical capabilities or engineering powers like that we have, we should be able to do a lot more, whereas all this other stuff that was far more fantastic for that time
mm-hmm.
has been achieved, in fact. And the thing is, it's because of the private sector,
mm-hmm.
whereas the government manages the road.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
So, like, I just thought it was something worth considering, at least, like, with the private sector, there is, at least in many cases, a more direct relationship, like, where the person sort of has more influence on that, whereas with governments, it's sort of where special interests are sort of trying to vie against each other for tax dollars. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, Jim, if you saw the Reader's Digest article just recently about the roads, like the state of many of the national highways and so on.
Are just a disaster.
Yeah.
So but they are still, as I said, they're a lot better than the roads were 100 years ago. Have to leave it there, Andre. Thank you for your call, sir. This is Talk of the Town on 1290 CJBK. Left, right, and center is what we call this particular hour. Our guests are Robert Metz, representing... Well, not representing, but giving us some suggestions, philosophical viewpoints from the right, and Jeffrey Schlemmer doing the same thing from the left, and we'll return with both of them and with your calls right after this. 1290 CJBK with Jeff Schlemmer, Bob Metz, and I'm Jim Chapman. Gentlemen, the Auditor General has, again, been releasing some things from his latest report here. One of them he noted was, I believe, $1.6 billion spent. These are tax revenues, too. Spent to create a new future for the fishermen. The fishermen of Canada's East Coast and to a lesser extent the West Coast. Tax money, Jeff, they took the tax money in, they spent it collectively, as you suggest, to try to solve this problem. And according to the Auditor General, they're not one footstep closer to a solution, but they are out $1.6 billion. And you say you think we should be paying more taxes than we're paying now.
Well, in a way, the way they spend the money is different from the way they bring it in. That they're two separate issues. However, on that issue, the difficulty is that I remember my economics prof back in university talking about the reasonable economic man and how they built economic assumptions based on the reasonable economic man. And what the reasonable economic man would do is if they could get a better job somewhere else, they would go and take that job. And what they find is that human nature doesn't work that way. People don't move nearly as readily as you might expect. That they get attachments to families, you know, to areas and so on. And Newfoundland is a good example of that, where what it appears that the solution is to shut down the fishery industry and have everybody move away from Newfoundland. For years, they've been trying to generate industry out there of one kind or another and have been largely unsuccessful. That's a social policy decision the government has made to try and say we're going to prop up Newfoundland, and maybe at some point they'll decide not to, and it will become more like a third world kind of an environment. I don't know. As far as where they spent all that money and nothing seems to have happened, I can't disagree with that. That's what the Auditor General said.
Well, I'm interested in your phrase, reasonable economic man. You say that people generally are, you know, lethargic or don't really get moving. And I think that's true to a degree, because as long as they're kept in some kind of comfort zone, particularly by government handouts, they're not going to move to the better position. They're not going to have to move. That's why I'm a big believer that people, you know, we shouldn't be spending so much money trying to make people comfortable. Discomfort is a great motivator. It's what motivates me. I know that when I get comfortable, I get lazy, and I'm not as productive. And that when I need money, that's when I get, you know, I get up off my rear end and I start working again. And it's a very necessary motivator in a society, and the more we try to curtail that motivation, the more we're destroying the productive part of our whole society. You know, getting back to Andre's call just before the break there, he was talking about that book, Free to Try, and I think a major point that he sort of, he didn't say it himself, but that came out of what he said was, you know, when we have these high rates of taxation, what happens is capital accumulation slows down. And capital is what a free society needs to do those great things that he was talking about. If you want to build a huge bridge, send a man to the moon, or whatever else, you need a lot of capital. You need a lot of input in order to build upon a base. And if somebody's always taking that capital away from you, the society cannot advance. And that is precisely why.
But it sure hasn't happened around here, that our companies have been making record profits the last several years.
Well, record profits in comparison. Again, you can't compare.
Comparison to me.
Listen, if their taxes were half of what they are, couldn't you automatically say then their profits would be exactly that much higher, and that money would be invested in something more productive rather than just expended?
What I see you're saying is that we would have a better society if General Motors ran the country country instead of the government. I would not live in a country where General Motors ran.
You keep saying that, we have a choice of buying things collectively, like through government, or we can do it individually through large corporations. Well, I disagree with you. Large corporations are a collective entity as well. This is where people voluntarily get together, which is a big difference from being forced together with the government. Like, you go to a big supermarket chain and stuff, they're working collectively. They're giving you lower prices than the small guy can give because they're working collectively, even though you enter the store as an individual. Mm-hmm. You don't go in there with your family in a group, and you can only buy their goods if you've got X number of people behind you.
But there are a lot of people in society that I don't think that they're interested in protecting. They're interested in making a profit, and that will cause them to do things like give me low prices and hopefully good value, and that's good. But there are a lot of other social values that they're not necessarily interested in preserving. And when I talk about the reasonable economic man, I didn't say that people were lethargic. I said they were loyal to their families.
Well, I have a question about that, though. We live on a continent that was developed by reasonable economic men.
Yes.
Because they were the people who looked around and said, sure, I've got family ties, I've got historical ties, I've got cultural ties. Screw it, I'm out of here.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I think everybody would agree that you can't sustain a province forever. You know, there has to be, if it's a transition, that's one thing. But, we had the example in Quebec of the looms supporting these things, mm-hmm. Forever. You can't, I don't think anybody was willing to support a province or a municipality or whatever forever. They'll say, we'll give you a start getting changed into something else. But we better recognize down the road that, as I say, there may be substantial changes in our society. But as I say, I don't like the corporate model of how it would look compared to what we have right now.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. And the lines are open at 643-1290. We have Dan with us. Good morning, Dan.
Hello, Jim.
Yes, sir.
I'm not liking your program.
Well, that's your privilege.
Yes. Hey, my family, three generations ago, came over the big water,
mm-hmm.
and we are here now.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be tossed around a lot of that. I would prefer that what you're doing with Bob and Jeff talks about today.
I don't understand what your complaint is.
Well, I don't really have a complaint, but there's been comments about what has happened in the past, taxation, and
because
6,000 years ago, and let's talk about now.
Well, what do you want to talk about? Point us in the direction you want us to go.
My kids.
What about them? Do you want to pay?
Do you want to talk about teachers?
No, we're not talking about teachers. We're talking about taxes.
Well, I don't like taxes.
Well,
I pay too much taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those two gentlemen should sit down themselves, and if they do have family, stop looking into a history book.
Well, Dan, don't you think you can learn anything from history? Don't you think that we can learn from other people's experiences in the past? Do we have to keep repeating the same mistakes? You're saying that we should just throw away history, throw away the past, and worry about your kids.
No, I wouldn't say that, Jim. No, I would not say that.
That wasn't me. That was Bob, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, that's not what I'm trying to say. Is here we are. We're talking about Ontario.
Uh-huh.
Are we not?
Well, we're talking about taxes in general. Yeah. Government's taking our money.
Yes.
Whether it's municipal,
here in
provincial,
Canada,
or Canada.
And it has nothing to do with anybody else, any other country.
Oh, sure.
Let's
it does.
Talk about
oh,
us.
It has a lot to do with other countries. Our tax system in this country has a lot to do with other countries because it has to do with our ability to compete with other countries.
I think you're going to find, Jim, that there's a lot of people out there that don't really give a you-know-what about other countries because they are trying to run their own household.
Well, then they're being very, very short-sighted and narrow-minded and not doing their kids a favor. And you were talking about the kids a moment ago there, Dan.
Yes.
We don't live isolated in this country. We're not isolated from the rest of the world. And I'm sure both of my co-hosts today on the left and the right would agree with that assessment. This is not an island we live on here.
I understand that. And there are things that leave this country financially for different reasons. And you've done a good job on pointing that out to people. But I guess I would really want all three of you to narrow it down to what is going to be the solution.
Well, that's what we're trying to find out, though, Dan, but I don't think any of us would claim that we necessarily have the solution today. Thank you for your call and comments, though. Appreciate it very much. I guess part of what we're trying to do here as we talk about these things is to try and come to some consensus or give you ideas about what the solutions are. But if any one of us knew absolutely what the solutions were, we probably wouldn't be here. We'd probably be out implementing them today.
But it is a useful framework. My kids talk to me all the time about sort of what's going to happen 10 and 20 years down the road. What's the country going to look like? The deficit is the first thing I say. You know, we're going to be paying your deficit the rest of our lives in our taxes. And at the same time, my comeback is, yeah, but I'm letting you use the 401 that I paid for free now.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of investment in infrastructure and education and all that stuff. But down the road, it'd be interesting to see where we are 10 years from now. One of the big concerns I have is the rise of what I think is a huge new tax, and that is the proliferation of lotteries.
Mm-hmm.
That is it seems to be the largest new source of government revenue.
But that's as one friend of mine, Bill Pigram, says, that's a tax on stupidity. Now, I stop and think about it, though. You know, and I think he makes a case there. The odds against you winning are astronomical, although nobody restricts you from doing that. But if you want to look at it as a tax, it is a tax on gullibility or stupidity or a tax on wishful thinking.
Well,
yes.
Lotteries and things like that are not taxes because they're voluntary. The thing that makes a tax
program,
is the fact that there's no value for the money you get, nothing guaranteed. And that even applies, even this morning, Brian Costello, for example, on CJBK, talking about Canada Pension Plan. Canada Pension is just a tax. It's not a pension premium that you pay. And they've only got a two-year lead on the program right now, and the Chrétien government is trying to make that 5 years. And that's how desperately close we are to bankrupting the Canada Pension Plan.
What do you mean
plan?
No value? You pay taxes and you get something
when
back
you,
in terms of services?
No, you don't.
You're
you don't
saying
get
you don't have a chance to win $1 million,
contract.
But you don't have a chance to win that anyway.
Wrong. If I pay a $25 a month fee to an insurance company, there's a contract between us, literally in dollars, I know exactly what I'm going to get in my pension. There's no such contract between you and your government.
Oh,
your
wow.
government can take your pension money and spend it on Newfoundland if it wants to.
For starters,
and it's
you
counting
pay UI premiums and you get UI benefits back, and that can change, that's true. But private contracts change all the time, too, I have to tell you.
Well,
insurance contracts change all the time.
Well, sure, they change, but they change for different reasons. They change because of voluntary things or someone's not able to pay. I mean, these things do happen. But nevertheless, when
the
government's
change,
involved,
so
there's
money.
No... There is no obligation on the part of government to deliver what it's taking the money for. And it can even take more money and give you less service, which is something you would never tolerate in a private market.
But again, you come down to accountability and whether there's more accountability in walking with your feet from one company to another versus more accountability in voting in or out of a particular government. It seems to me to come down to who you believe in.
Voting is
I say
no
that the companies are basically all the same. There's not a dramatic difference between the value you're going to get between Ford and GM, for instance.
You know when voting would be an accountable? If when you voted, you were directly responsible for paying for the things that you voted for, and only the people who voted for those things paid for them. That would be an accountable system, but it's not the way it works. What we're doing now is under a majority rule system, which is why we have endless taxes, by the way, because the majority of people, let's face it, there's more tenants than there are landlords. There's more poor people than there are rich people. So as long as you got a majority rule system, they are going to try and vote the money out of the upper classes, even though it never works. It puts everybody in worse situations.
This is Talk of the Town on 1290 CJBK. When we return, we'll be talking with Chris and Bob and Jeff, and maybe you too. Clemmer on the left, Bob Metz on the right, and let's find out where Chris is. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm really perturbed with the whole taxation in this country because I find they get their money from off the backs of the average person and especially small business.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I ran a small manufacturing shop for 9 years. We unfortunately lost it in October of 95 due to the poor economy. But one thing that totally perturbed me through the whole 9 years was the taxes that we paid constantly to the government. And when it was when it was time for us to close the business down, it was like they to this day have not left us alone. We paid all our bills and everything, but one thing that really totally bothered me, and I don't know if you gentlemen could help or not, during the 9 years being married to the business, I don't know if this has anything to do, I guess, indirectly with taxes, but I paid UIC payments regularly because I was classified as an employee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I, at the end of the business, when we were just about broke, I collected UIC. Now I have to go to tax court to fight because they want all that money back. And I've mentioned this. I mentioned this to you, Jim, back in the spring.
Yep.
And I faxed to you a thing, but I guess it wasn't popular or important enough. I never did get a response. And I was wondering if...
Well, you faxed something to me and didn't get a response, or to the government?
No, I faxed it straight to you.
Well, fax it again. Make sure my name's on it in big letters. You'll get a response.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I find that the more people I talk to, the bigger the this problem is. And it's coast to coast. And I don't think a lot of people who are not self-employed or who have ever owned a small business are aware of this.
No.
They think that small businesses or businesses, period, are immune from a lot of these things.
Well, they're licensed,
but if anything,
we were getting hit so hard. They're licensed to print money, you small business people.
You know, this is a chronic problem, what businessmen face in this country today. I remember the first time I started working in business, and we had to pay business taxes downtown, and I couldn't understand what they were for. I could understand property taxes. You're getting your roads, you're getting your sewers. You know, the price was exorbitant, but at least I knew there was something connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
I called City Hall, and I asked them what the business tax was for, and I was literally told by City Hall, the guy that answered the phone said, well, that's the fine for doing business in this city. He called it a penalty. And, it brings to mind that old saying, you know, a fine is a tax for doing bad, and a tax is a fine for doing good. And and what we're literally doing in this country is punishing people for being virtuous, for making money, for not being on the dole, for hard work, for things like that. And I'll tell you, the taxes that we charge to business people like yourself are far greater than any fine we would give to any criminal.
Chris, I have to leave it there. If you please send me a copy of that fax. I don't know why I didn't get it the last time, but you put my name on it in big letters, and I guarantee I'll respond. And we've got Patrick up. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
I just wonder if it's a philosophy that we're discussing this morning. Is it that we are a socialist country that is trying to move towards capitalism, and if we are a socialist country, then all the government programs and expenses are just part of enjoying the benefits of those, and taxes
are part of that.
I don't want to pay taxes, but...
Well, let me ask a question of our guests here. Any, either of you gentlemen disagree that we are fundamentally a socialist country?
One time, maybe. Certainly not now.
Okay.
Well, I would disagree implicitly.
Look at corporate profits right now. They're just record levels.
I was the best man at a wedding where a friend of mine got married to a young lady from China, communist China. And there were a lot of Chinese people there. And we sat at dinner one time, and they were astounded that any Canadian would think that this was a capitalist country. They thought Canada was the ideal socialist country. This was about 10 years ago. And because what they saw here was people getting benefits, and they still saw a relatively prosperous nation because we are a mixed economy, basically. And if you take a look, if you want to determine how socialist or how capitalist we are, I mean, you can argue about that all day long. You just have to, that's a personal decision, I think. But when you have more than half of your income taken in taxes, I would say that we're more than half socialist, and that we would become fully socialist when Jeff reaches his perfect society where we all pay 100% tax.
Patrick, let me ask you a question. Do you think we live in a socialist society?
I believe we do.
Are you uncomfortable with that as long as you get the services you want?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so...
But my question is, I guess, just for my own sake and my own discussions, is on the world stage... Is Canada considered a socialist country, or a capitalist country, or a country in transition?
I think you'd have to ask the people who occupy the chairs on that stage, and I suspect you'd get different answers from different people, different observers, depending on their particular point of view.
Yeah, if they're capitalist, they'll say that it's socialist. If they're socialist, they'll say it's capitalist.
Thank you for the call today, Pat.
Thanks.
It's good to hear from you. We're going to pause for just a second. Still time to have your say on Left, Right, and Center right here on 1290. Couple minutes left here on Left, Right, and Center. I'm going to ask both of you guys, rather than a closing comment, I'm going to ask you to put your prognostication caps on, and in 30 seconds or less, tell me where you think we'll be in taxation 10 years from now. Will we pay more, Bob Metz, or less?
I think we'll pay more, but it won't be called taxes. It won't be seen as taxes. We'll see all kinds of other things called taxes. There's all types of them, from user fees to whatever, although user fees aren't taxes per se. But it'll come down to people more paying for their own. But I still see the basic rate of tax being high. It's not going to go away for a while until the spending stops.
Jeff Schlemmer, do you see any, does your view diverge from Bob's in any significant way?
The trend has been towards reducing spending, although at some point we've got to start attacking the accumulated debt. So I think that income taxes will decline somewhat, at least for the next 5 or 6 years. That's the trend. There are going to be lots of other forms of taxation, though, like, let's say, the user fees, lotteries, all that kind of stuff. Government spending is not declining dramatically. I think 10 years from now will probably be basically the same, but they'll call it something else.
Is it so bad, Bob, if they do turn it into more user fees, where we do have the option of using the service or not?
No, I think that's great. I think a user fee is a user fee, whereas a tax is a non-user fee, which is the silliest idea I could ever think of, to have to pay for something that you don't use. I don't think there's a long-term solution. I think there's no such thing as a fair tax. Let's forget that idea right off the top of our heads. But we should be shooting for the lowest taxes possible. I think we need a Taxpayer Protection Act. We should have flat taxes, visible taxes. I'm a big supporter of separating the taxing powers from the spending powers, as the Swiss do, which is a totally separate system. And you cannot just cut taxes, though, and cut spending in government without giving choice to people. And I think this is a big mistake, where a lot of governments are cutting spending in certain areas but not extending the necessary choice to people to make up for the loss in the spending. Our education and healthcare are a perfect example.
How long can we afford to go the way we're going? Jeff says he'd be happy to pay more taxes as long as he kept getting the goodies that he
wants.
Like
Brian Casella says, our Canada pension plan's got between 2 and 5 years. If we want it to last longer, we're going to have to raise the taxes exorbitantly again. And
your car insurance is going up by the same rate.
Well, mostly because of government regulation.
It's not like me suing people.
Well, if you want to take the blame for that, you're right.
The automobiles, so part of that, too, is the increased cost and complexity of the automobiles. You can't fix them as readily as you used to be able to.
Yeah, everything goes up. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time when you pulled a fender off, put a new one on, the way it went.
Sure.
Or patched it, the way it went. Today, you'd pick half the car and throw it away. Gentlemen, thank you. A pleasure as always.
Thank
Jeff
you.
Schlemmer on the left and Robert Metz on the right, on
thank
left,
you.
Right, and center on this portion of Talk of the Town. We do hope you will join us tomorrow morning for another edition of the show. For Ryan and Don and Jeff and Robert, please take care of each other. Mind how you go, and we will see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.